Hollow footfalls echoing through empty corridors. The primal reaction of flesh brushed by an unseen touch. Shadowy figures slipping between the moss-covered boles of ancient trees. Strange calls issuing from not-quite-human throats, piercing the stillness of the night. Unusual lights and objects streaming across darkened skies. Stolen minutes and a void filled with obscured and disturbing memories. These occurrences and more are called by many whispered names in many countries around a world we believe we know so well. All of these things share a common thread. I'm Charles Romans, and welcome to the pathways leading to the Shadows of Legend.
Hello, this is Charles Romans, your host for Shadows of Legend, and today we're speaking with Kodiak Cunningham from Fayetteville, North Carolina. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm here, bouncing down the road.
So I understand you spend a lot of time on the road.
Yeah, my partner and I are on the road for 6 to 7 weeks at a time, then we get a week off and go wherever. He likes to travel to like Madagascar and do the whole charity stuff, gives money to people that need it.
Yes.
And I usually go find the nearest bar and it's a good cigar, so I guess I'm not the good one.
So what would you like to share with us today? What are your brushes with the strange and the paranormal and the not easily explained?
Well, sir, I became a pagan about 2004. I was going to Appalachian State. And if you've traveled in that area and you're even a slightly keen to energy, you'll know that different parts of the parkway feel different ways. The Cherokee are rumored to have released several portals and other entities in that area when they were trying to keep the white man from running them off their land. And if you are brave enough to drive that road at night, you will encounter several interesting things. When I first started my journey as a pagan, I hated spirit animals. I definitely hated spirit animals. I used to have this wolf spirit that would chase me around campus until I had my awakening, and then we kind of agreed to disagree, and he disappeared, and he showed up 6 months later as my puppy. So it was interesting.
Sounds interesting story in itself.
Oh yeah, no, I got called as a shaman of Hearn in 2014. My grandmother was a seeress. We're American mutt and crow. So I've got Scandinavian, Celtic, and crow blood in me. My dad has a permanent tan, and of course I can't grow facial hair to save my life. So anyways, you stay. I like my fire water and I don't get hangovers, but
well, at least that's a plus.
Definitely. So anyways, I'm kind of all over the place here. You know how when you have you have interaction in your life, or you're afraid of something, and then all of a sudden you're not afraid of something?
Yes.
So I grew up being highly afraid of bears, and I just had this dream. I was at my grandparents' farm, and I was getting chased by these bears all the time, and I bought my first shotgun, Mossberg 500A Persuader, and the bear dream stopped, and then the shotgun broke because I was an idiot kid, didn't know how to oil it properly.
Yes.
And the bear dreams came back. And then this is when I was at college, you know, in college you're experiencing all kinds of new things. And I got into rallycross while I was at college too. And that comes into play with the whole, I call it the breaker of doom, you know, in your head when it goes.
Yes.
So I was out with some buddies and they're going to play rallycross. And I was at the point in my life where my girlfriend just broke up with me. I didn't care. And I was like, screw it. And like that breaker went and I didn't care if I lived or died.
Well, now, if you don't care if I interrupt you here, what exactly is rallycross? You might want to explain that to our listeners.
Right. I did amateur rallycross for a little bit, but anyways. Explain rallycross?
Yeah, just give people a basic breakdown so they'll know what the reference is.
Oh, okay. Rallycross is racing sideways through the trees at 60 miles an hour.
Okay. Is it motorcycles, side-by-sides, what?
No, it's cars. You take your car sideways through the trees at 60 okay. miles an hour. I grew up in Fayetteville, like I said, and I hate NASCAR. I know I'm weird. Everything else about being a Southern boy I am, but I hate NASCAR. And what I liked about rallycross and Baja are the two races that you can build yourself up from nothing and become someone. NASCAR is like redneck royalty. You have to buy your way in.
Okay.
But yeah, I delivered pizzas in Boone for Papa John's, Domino's, and Pizza Hut, and I got really good at drifting my car through the trees, and that's how I got into rallycross. But that's what it means. If you're like Google rallycross and like you see cars flying through the air, that's rallycross.
Well, it sounds like a bit of a dangerous hobby.
Yes, sir. But it's like I said, I told you, tangents, laser pointers, because I'm going to go off. But well, that's anyways, so that switch went, and from then on, I was not really afraid of living or dying when it came to doing that kind of stupidity. And then I had the, we were talking about something or a bear spirit or something, or I don't remember what we were talking about. Well, one night I had the dream, the bear dream, and when I saw the bear and said the bear charging me, I charged it. And from that moment on, I was never afraid of bears again. So, foreshadowing, if you find me dead in the woods and there's bear paw prints everywhere, I charge the bear.
Right. Okay. It's good to know. Hopefully this will never have to be used for a in any sort of legal proof or research.
Yeah, yeah. I'm currently building my truck up for full-time overlanding, so it could happen. You never know. You can put it in a post, and, you know.
Well,
I have a white yappy dog. I'll probably bark and scare the dog because they'll bear away, so we're good. But anyways, so yeah, so switches, everything. I befriended a group of Wiccans back then, and they used to do this thing where they would patrol the parkway. I'm using air quotations that you can't see.
Okay.
They would patrol the parkway, and they would, like, gear up by drinking or eating mugwort, which is this herb that's supposed to open your third eye wide open, and it's all legal. I mean, it doesn't do anything but make you have better dreams, supposedly. But
and ideally and used for a heightened state of awareness, correct?
Right. Kind of like you know, Big Trouble in Little China. I can see things no one else can see, do things no one else can. Not really.
Right. Good movie.
I had a girlfriend I told that would do it, and like she was drinking it all the time. I'm like, this is actually a poison. You can't do this all the time. But anyways, so if you travel north on the parkway from was that Fancy Gap or Lower Gap or from like Boone and heading north on the parkway, you come across this hill called Tom Dooley Hill.
Uh-huh.
And they believe that there is an elemental that lives there. And I just had my awakening back then, and I was more sided towards the animals than the people. So I'm with my friends, and they're all supposedly fighting these shadow people that I can't see. Yeah. And one friend had the Klingon bat leva. Yeah, like I said, they're a bunch of nerds. And anyways, so have you ever heard of someone call something a Therian or Therianthrope or
yeah.
other kin?
But okay. You may want to explain that for the listener.
Okay. A Therian is a person who believes they are born with a animal spirit that shares their life journey with them.
I see.
We're not furries. Those
no, that's an entirely
odd,
different thing.
Harmless. They're mostly harmless, nice people that like to be in suits. Now, Therians are people that believe that they have a animal spirit that shares their journey with them. And in fact, they are this at times.
Okay.
And we are also, those of us who are considered old Therians are secretive. We don't go about telling people. So this is the first time I've really kind of broken cover and something like this, but it's all good. I don't care. There's much crazier stuff out there nowadays. No one cares about Therians. We're all good.
But I think that, though it's an interesting belief, and that's why I ask clarifying questions. Because
no, it's fine. It's a lot, some along the lines of like the rainbow children, indigo children, people that are believed to be here to make change. It's similar though, but it's hey, I believe I'm part a wolf sometimes, or hey, I believe I'm a bear sometimes. This and that going on. Side note, I've only tend to date other Therians. I've never dated someone who considers themselves being 100% human. So we're all weird, and we all are drawn to weird stuff. So we'll just leave it.
Well, yeah, it seems to be that most interesting people are a little weird. So it's not something you'll get a negative judgment from me for.
And look, I was a band nerd. I'm as weird as they come. Anyways, when I said I had my awakening, as the wolf.
Okay.
And that's why the wolf was chasing me. The spirit wolf was following me around until I had my awakening. And then he showed up as a puppy in my life to help guide me further. You know, pagan hindsight is 2020, just like anything else. You don't figure things out until it happens. And usually I'll cuss out Odin when it happens. So it's, you'll hear, Odin! And I'm like, no, I just saw everything that just happened to me.
Well, typically it's easier to understand everything backwards than it's forward.
Right. So my path into paganism started with me having the awakening as a Therian. And everything I've done, I started with the wolf first. I was actually at the precipice of either going back to being Christian, because I've been without a religion for about 3 or 4 years at this point. I got saved when I was in high school because I got into a gang fight, and I turned to God like you're supposed to. And then after I got saved, it kind of like blew up my world. Everyone turned on me. All kinds of stuff happened. So I didn't really know what to do, you know, at that age, because you're taught, you know, to go turn to Jesus. I grew up in the church, all this stuff. So I kind of wandered without a religion for a few years. And then I turned to paganism right after I found the wolf. And I remember going, okay, I've got the wolf thing now. I can go back to Christianity and I'll be seen as a weirdo and a monster. Or I can try this pagan thing and it's considered natural. We'll go this way.
So how has that changed things?
I've never looked back, to tell you the truth. I'm thankful that I found the wolf first, and then I found magic. I got this book that I tended to, moving on further in my life, I tend to give out to people. I actually, pagans don't recruit. That's the number one rule. We don't recruit. We don't push our BS on you. Okay. That being said, I did have a successful recruit of someone years later in Phoenix, and I consider him my greatest success, even though I wasn't really trying at the time. But so I had this book. It was actually written by an ancestor of mine, Scott Cunningham's Intro to Solitary Wicca.
All right.
And a couple of my witch friends, and like at the time, they said they were witches, and I'd never needed anyone to prove to me what a witch was. I've always been an oddball and like the paranormal and the sci-fi and stuff. So they gave me this book, and I was sitting in the Harris Theater parking lot in Boone, one of my favorite places to hang and just deal with stuff. Or when Harry Potter would come out, I would go buy a gallon of sweet tea at Bojangles and hide it in the woods behind the mall and read my book in private. But those days are long gone.
Well,
but,
I mean, it's kind of like a quiet place to read.
Well, you don't want any spoilers, you know? You want to read the whole thing for yourself. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I've been known to read an entire book in a day, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh yeah, I'm a book nerd. I was in Battle of Books in junior high. Yeah, I'm that nerd. But anyways, so I'm up in the Harris Theater parking lot. I'm reading this book, and in the first three chapters, I have more spiritual awakening feeling in my body than I had in 16 years of being a Southern Baptist.
Okay.
So I didn't mean to take this towards my entire journey, but I guess we're on that path now. We're just going to hang in there, okay? I'm sorry.
Well, that's quite all right. Sometimes it's like drinking an egg. You don't stop in the middle.
I don't think I've done that.
Oh, back when
Irish car bombs, sure, but
well, you know, years ago when the movie Rocky came out, and you know, of course, Sylvester Stallone's cracking the eggs in the glass. And my brother, who's a little bit older than him, and his friends were trying to do that. I said, well, it's nothing. You just turned up and drank it. So then, you know, everybody got it. Now it would be the Rocky challenge, you know. How many eggs can you drink? And think
oh,
of it
God,
is,
Tide Pods with eggs. I can't know.
Oh, God, yeah. And the thing of it is, you know, it's one of those things. Once you start, you can't stop. Because if you stop, everything breaks and it makes this giant mess, and then everybody gets sick and somebody has to clean it up. So,
yeah, it sounds like you're making a red eye, but without the alcohol and the Tabasco sauce.
Something along those lines. But anyway, go right ahead. Continue, please.
Yeah, sorry. So, as a Christian growing up, I would look at, like, you know, Jesus on the cross. I always felt like there was like this stopper, like there was just nothing coming through, you know? And then, like, when I was reading this book, the first three chapters, I felt more spiritual awakening. Like, it's hard to explain to someone that's never felt it. It's like an electric current that's like vibing through your body.
Okay.
And you're like, and you're starting to just realize things in your life, and they're all starting to lock into place.
Yeah.
It was not a Dragon Ball Z moment. I was not over 9,000, but I was probably around 300.
So now I want to clarify something here. You'd mentioned Harry Potter earlier, but this book you're talking about, The Awakening from that was actually the book written by your ancestor, correct?
Yeah, well, we probably weren't closely related, but, you know, his last name's Cunningham, my last name's Cunningham. I see him as an ancestor that way.
Right, but I just wanted to clarify that this spiritual awakening came from this book.
It didn't come from Harry Potter. No, Harry Potter. No, Harry Potter was just entertainment.
Right. Yes. I just wanted to clarify that.
No, I'm not that weird.
Please continue.
So I end up hooking up with these witches that became my friends and my family, and we go out and we go hunting. And like I said, we were at that Tom Dooley Hill, and the high priestess in the group is going off about how these things look like wolves and this and that. And she's going off, and I just kind of walk across the circle of protection. I'm like, you guys are fine over there. I'm going to go hang out with the wolves because they're not as much dicks as you are right now. And they would never let me have mugwort because they're afraid of me being a freshly awakened Therian that I might wolf out or something. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's totally possible. Uh-huh, sure.
So
this being a Therian is also what has fueled me over the years to seek dogmen and other paranormal things. It's because being different makes me not look at monsters as monsters. Unfortunately, as we've all figured out as we've gotten older in life, the real monsters are human.
Yes, because you mentioned werewolves earlier. I've said for decades.
Oh, I love werewolves.
I've said for decades that the evil part of a werewolf isn't the wolf part, it's the man part.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the bestial part of it lets the human part cut loose. It gives an excuse because animals.
Now I will say when I went through my awakening, I did have similar cravings and emotional issues. Like I remember being working at Papa John's and my boss pissed me off, and that little line that's there that's supposed to keep you sane and keep you from doing bad things,
yes,
it just vanished, and I went and locked myself in the bathroom because I didn't trust myself.
Well, that's a good thing that you could exercise some self-control because, you know, that kind of behavior is generally frowned upon in
standard
society.
Yeah. You know, but like, whether there's like little things like, Therians have these things called phantom shifts all the time. Like I'll have a weird feeling and then like I feel like I have ears on my head. Or I'll smell something, like I'll smell like a dead animal on the side of the road and it will excite me or something, where it would make someone almost gag, you know, things like that. Or like I can hear things, I think I can hear things, or I think I can feel things. That's as far as it goes. That's all that happens. There's no wolfing out, no chasing things and biting people or anything.
So it's more like channeling senses.
Yeah, it is. Well, if you look at like how the berserkers were, you know, in the Viking era.
Yes.
How they would take on the attributes of an animal. The Native Americans did it too. So there's a lot of shamanism in that, which is kind of interesting because I was called as a shaman. And I feel like whenever I come across people that aren't Therians, because all of my magical abilities are tied into the wolf.
I see.
Like when I tell people that they feel like someone's attacking them or something, I'm like, well, don't you use your shields? And they're like, what shields? I'm like, you need to find an animal you find kinship with and invite it to be your partner. And then you tie all your magic shielding to that. And when people attack you, the animal has faster instincts than the human does. And it will instinctively put your shield up and save you from people trying to throw bad curses at you or whatever.
So if you don't mind, let's delve into the shamanism aspect of it. What does it actually entail to be a shaman?
A very flexible mind.
Okay.
You have to deconstruct everything you've been told is not possible and kind of be open and free and willing to go with things. And I consider myself a shaman in practice, a practicing shaman, because I may be part Crow, but I look like a white Scot-Irish guy. And I have tried to seek knowledge from other Native people and like the Dene in Arizona and stuff. And I've been told several times by grandfathers I'm too Anglo to teach. So I kind of figure it out where I can as I go along.
I see.
And that's why I call it practicing shaman, because I don't want to, and there will be people that hear me talking about being a shaman and they're going to get butt hurt because it's a Native word and this and that. And that. And so I came up with one of my other shaman friends. So I started calling myself a Magus of Hearn, which is pretty much a shaman of Hearn. Look, until there's a better word for shaman and what you do as a shaman, then, I mean, yes, you're a healer. And yes, you're an empath, and yes, you're all these other things, but it's like shamans are kind of like the Care Bears.
Okay.
We all have a distinct feature. Each person does a certain type of energy work. Like I have one friend that helps with the soul. I have another friend that can heal, that does the theta healing and stuff. It's really cool to watch. But one of my best friends, she's actually been a shaman her whole life. She's in her 70s. And we can both work on each other. In fact, she was instrumental in helping me to open my shields enough for me to marry my wife when we got together. Because I had become so jaded by people that I just wanted nothing to do with people. And she can affect me. And the next day I'm like, God, I didn't feel anything. But now what the, oh God, what did you do to me? And the next day for her, it's the same thing. We can't feel each other, but we still feel the effects later on.
Well, see, it sounds so, that that's a positive thing for you.
Right. Yeah, but it's still bewildering as all get out. So say I was someone was coming to me and they were saying like, well, like I was just at my sister's this past weekend and she's dating this new girl and I have a few peripherals that I bring with me. Like I have a large glass ball that is like pretty much like a wrecking ball. It takes you directly through the veil the second you grab it. And I've only recently gotten to the point where I can pick it up and I don't start crying because my wife died 3 years ago and it's still a process. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
I just want it gone. I just want to go back to being me. Like this weekend was the first time I finally took my ring off. I've had my ring on for the last 3 years and my sister yelled at me enough. And I was like, okay, you're right. I was taking this personal. I thought the gods did it to me and then she just died. And okay, I'm taking the ring off. And since I'm taking my ring off, I felt more control return. Like I still get, while we were parked on the side of the road earlier and there were some thistles. And thistles is a big thing with me and my wife. And it started to hurt. But because I'm not wearing the ring, it didn't take over. It was just, okay, that makes me sad. But I'm not going to start crying right now because I got to change shifts.
Well, I understand. I mean, it allows you to heal a little bit. It's part of the process.
I just wish the process was over. I just want to go back to being who I was. I love my wife and she's probably staring at me holding a frying pan right now, ready to smack me. See, the joys of being pagan is we don't believe that they're gone entirely. Like if I were to go across the veil to my workspace, she would be there. And I send people there from time to time when they need help. I'll say, well, go across the veil, go to my fire and Amethyst will be there to help you. And
well, now, you've mentioned going across the veil a couple of times. Would you care to elaborate on that so that the listeners will understand?
Sure. As a magic user, especially my particular talent as a shaman is I mostly channel gods. Okay. So I will cross the veil, which is the veil between this earth and like the next, like Samhain or Halloween for the layman, is when the veil is thinnest and that's when spirits can come across.
Yes, and going across could come back and everything.
Yeah, right. So across the veil is a crossroads, and at the crossroads, I have several friends connected to me so I can like hop over and bother them when they're not. We do a lot of astral projecting and screwing with each other. It's just you have to have friends to mess with. You know, just how life works.
Well, in any case, yes, you have to have friends.
I have no control over what my astral self sometimes does. I'll have like, you were here. I'm like, no, I wasn't. I was asleep. I don't know what happened. But the veil is just like the cover between this waking world and the sleeping world or the spiritual world. It does the best I can describe it. Some people have to do all they think they have to do all these intricate like I just started studying with a bunch of sinisterists and they're always going on about all these different types of meditation, okay. All these crazy meditations for breathing exercises and things. And I'm like, you don't have to do that. Just close your eyes and you're there. But then shaman is a flexible mind, whereas people I'm dealing with in the sinister group are mostly coming from the Christian world and they haven't been living in the pagan world for the last 20 years. So,
well, sometimes if we believe a door is locked, we're going to try to unlock it whether we have to or not.
Exactly. And there are days, even though I can just close my eyes and be across the veil, that I can't get across. And it's a block in me and it's not the veil. It's just me being stupid.
So it's kind of a question of perception and awareness.
Right. Pretty much. See, okay. One of the things I learned when I first started down this path was I met an empath and she was explaining to me how like we could do things across. Like she was in Bremerton, outside of Seattle, and I was down in Portland, and we were connecting and doing energy work from that far. And I didn't think it was possible. I thought you had to be like up close with somebody. And then I had another friend who's also a Therian and a shaman, and we were able to. He was able to fix my back from Milwaukee, and I was in Portland. And I was like, okay, I'm starting to believe.
Well, that would be a version of proof there. So you would have a precedent.
Right. But yeah. So go ahead, pick something else. I'm just open book.
So now, earlier you'd mentioned being a big fan of dogma. And given the shamanic connection there, it would be completely understandable. What are some of your interactions with these creatures?
I have actually come across some people that claim to be able to physically shift in my search for others like me.
Yes.
And I don't want to give any details that would endanger them or anything, but I do know people that, whether it was a trick, it was a really good trick, I think they can. And I've seen things in the hills of Arizona. And it could have been a dog man or it could have been my friends, but I'm not sure. But there are ways to actually shift. But it's not anything romantic. It's not anything good. And I'm starting to think nowadays that the dog man that are showing up more and more are actually some kind of alien or alien trick. But
okay, well, qualify that then. If you think that it's a, some sort of trick. Now, a lot of people would say, as a school of thought, that when you have a spate of sightings, for instance, it's simply kind of a copycat thing. It's a psychological thing that, Bob saw this, so hey, I saw that thing Bob saw. So,
well, the smell and the terror are very relevant. Like, I listened to, Basecamp Chris? I love his stories.
Okay.
He does a good job. And anytime he mentions something from North Carolina, as soon as I get off the road, I go seek it out. And the stories that, because he has the interviews afterwards that he had with the people about the story after he tells it.
Yes.
And there's one in Newland, North Carolina. And I went out with my buddy, who is the most stalwart person I know, who started getting freaked out. And I was like, dude, the gun's right there. We're fine. We went out and checked it out, and it was exactly the way the guy said it. And I'm like, this is cool. All right, so this is cool. And he's like, it feels creepy. I'm like, yeah, it feels creepy, but it's Newland, and I got a nice shiny truck around to all these rednecks, you know? When I used to wander around all the time, like, I have wanderlust like you wouldn't believe. I'll even get out of the semi, hop in my power wagon, and wander off. I can't stop wandering. I wander down through, like, Globe, which is this really rural area, like, south of Blowing Rock and to the east, southeast of Lenore. And they were like, how can you go through them? Like, just smile and wave, and they won't look at you twice. Don't make yourself an object. Just keep going.
Right. Well, and typically people will assume you're supposed to be there.
Exactly. And though if you pay attention to my stickers and my truck, you probably figure out that I don't belong.
So what are some of your personal sightings? Would you care to share any of those instances?
I had one when I was in Phoenix. I'd always get this feeling when the moon was full to come out because I was friends with a quote-unquote pack.
Yes.
And I would always get this feeling to come out and, like, you know, if you read Patricia Briggs, her werewolves are very on point.
Okay.
Not saying all the magic and stuff is true, but a lot of the way the way they act and the way they are interact with people, a lot of those things are very on point. In fact, she was at Powell's a few years ago reading for one of the new books, and I confronted her about it, and she goes, oh, they're horrible. I'm like, no, you've got a source. Someone is telling you something because your werewolves are on point. The few interactions I've had with these creatures are on point. Except people that can claim that they can shift, when they do shift, they're all animal and not person. And the longer you spend in that form, like I said, it's not very romantic, because the longer you spend in that form, the less human you can think.
I see.
And like when you transfer back and forth, then you become dumber and dumber and dumber, like Ernest P. Worrell.
Well, that would be decidedly unromantic.
Right, right.
But it's a human nature to think that we can have the best of everything and none of the drawbacks.
I know, it's the fantasy. It's all the fantasy. But if you look through all the different cultures, as far as you can go back, every culture has vampires and werewolves.
Yes, I agree with that. I've studied a lot of folklore mythology growing up, and there's similarities all throughout the world.
I always liked the Celtic wolves because they were good. They weren't. Yes. They were protectors. They weren't really evil. And like, I was inspired, as was Miss Briggs, to write about the Merrick. Okay. I wrote about a Charles Merrick before I came across her books. Now I need, if I ever go public, I'm going to have to change his name because I don't want to look like I was copying her. Merrick, if you've done the research, you know, is a werewolf tale during the King Arthur days. And he was betrayed by his wife and her lover, and they stole his clothes. He was cursed with lycanthropy, and they stole his clothes, and he couldn't return. And somehow he showed up in the court and exposed them, and he got his clothes back. And that's pretty much the whole story in its nutshell.
Yes.
But both So that's why I fixated on, you know, King Arthur, you know, great. And then, of course, a good werewolf that was betrayed, you know, so.
Well, in a lot of Celtic mythology, for instance, it was typically a magical belt that would allow them to change.
Yeah.
But when they changed, like you were saying before, they were more wolf than human.
Right. Yeah. And so I would go out to Apache Junction. Like I said, I did amateur rallycross. So I love going out there because the cops had told me, if you're out here after midnight, we don't care. You can fall off a cliff. We don't care. And Arizona has this law that if you do something stupid and it requires a helicopter to come get you, you have to pay for the fuel.
Yes.
It's like the idiot clause or something.
A lot of states have went to that.
Yeah. So since I can't run, because I'm kind of a fat guy, the closest I would get is pulling the moonroof open on my Mazda 3, grinding through the gears, listening to techno and howling at the moon, driving through the hills. That was my running with a pack, because I'm not very good at running in this shape.
Wow. Okay.
And then I would go out to this picnic area near, can't remember the name of the lake. It's Canyon Lake, I think. Out, if you go down the ice, what's 177 and 166, through Apache Junction, out towards Tortilla Flats, and you keep going where the dirt takes over the road.
Yes.
There's a lake out there. There's two lakes. There's one that's got a bunch of people around that, and then there's another one past it. And I would usually go down and find a camping spot in the dirt. I would sing pagan chants to the gods and the moon. And one of my buddies, I was telling you, it was like one of my successes. He saw them first. I didn't see them. I was just singing. I knew they were there because I could feel them.
Okay.
But he said he saw what we would account to be dog men, the short snout and the big hunched shoulders. And
yes.
And they would just sit there and stare at me and watch me sing. And nothing ever really happened. They'd just do their thing and I would do my thing. And then one night, I was out there without my friend. I had another roommate with me.
Yes.
This one believed he was a vampire. He was insufferable. He thought he was vampire, slayer, whatever anime that he loved. He was always comparing himself to that. I'm like, okay, whatever, dude. So I'm still, I wasn't a shaman at this point. I was just still a little pagan that was also a Therian seeking, trying to find other monsters.
Yes.
And we go out to that spot and I started doing my thing. And then he goes, dude, we got to go. We got to go right now. And I'm like, okay, let's go. So we hop in my car and we take off and we head towards the reservoir. And I shit you not, my annoying, slightly empathic friend
yes.
goes blank for a minute. And he says, someone's here and he wants to talk to you. And then he changes his voice and becomes someone different. Now I know what happened now as I've gotten older, but back then it was kind of freaky.
Yeah, that would put you off. Yes, definitely.
And like I said, I've only just recently gotten to the point where I can see things. I got the image of like someone sat in the back seat and talked through my friend, and I got the image of like chainmail and a cloak and a beard. I couldn't see the face.
I see. Yeah.
And apparently it was Odin. I had just recently gone from Wiccan to Asatru when I moved to the valley. And apparently it was Odin, and he came to save me. He said that one of the people that didn't like me in the group, which I know who he was, I don't want to say his name, but okay. One of the people in that group didn't like me because I kind of hooked up with a girl he was interested in and became this whole thing.
Well,
was there and he was going to kill me.
Jealousy is a powerful
oh, yeah.
negative motivation.
Oh, yeah. Especially in people that believe they can turn into animals, it's definitely a bad thing.
Well, yeah, I would say, yes.
We got out of there, and I had a long conversation with my friend, who wasn't my friend, for a person I thought was Odin in the back seat. It was interesting. And that's just one of many things odd things that have happened to me over the last two decades. So I was on this group where I met this person that pushed me over to you, and that they were all talking about different things that I've never really experienced, like the not deer and the shrikes and stuff. And I've never really experienced it. And I wander through the woods a lot. Being what I am, a Therian and a shaman, I attract things like crazy. So I'll go take a leak in the woods, hop in the car, and move on to another spot because I will attract things.
Well, could it be possible that certain things avoid you because they know that you're
attracting? Right. When I first started out, like I said, when I was first going out with my Wiccan friends, I didn't have a side. I didn't choose a side. I was just another entity out there. I didn't really pick a side. And then I dated a girl. If you ever watched Princess Mononoke, that boar demon that attacks the village in the beginning.
Yes.
Her aura looked like that because she, thought she knew more than she did, and something got inside her and ate its way out of her aura, and it was like dragging a sponge full of blood behind me. It would attract every bad thing in every little dinky town we stopped at, every portal that was open in, like, the backwoods of North Carolina. We would just go driving at night, and we would drag it all home with us. And then I would have to scare it off or kill it or banish it. And it made me go from being natural and not picking sides to picking a side.
Well, and by survival, nothing. For survival.
Right, yeah. That was a bad relationship. And then I've met inert angels and reapers, angels that are born in human flesh.
Okay.
Kind of like a dumbed-down version of the Nephilim.
I see.
There are God-born. The gods that we worship live among us and live in people. So they have the same experiences and such. And there are people that are considered to be reapers, people that eat bad entities. They're interesting people. They're always off, but on a good way, but off.
You say
I had a manager who was one.
Now, when you say reaper, of course, people think initially the Grim Reaper, and it has a negative connotation. But the way you mentioned that, if something that consumes negative things, then that would by default be a positive.
Exactly. But, you know, people judge. And that's why I said, you know, when I am, I don't judge. I don't see monsters as monsters. Mostly see people as a monster because, by and large, most things are natural. So, like, bears scare me, but a bear defending its cub or eating something is just in its nature. It's not evil. It's just surviving.
Well, this is true.
And nature is not pretty. My father's a biologist. My mom's a kindergarten teacher. I grew up playing with a lot of interesting things. So I like long walks on the beach and poking dead things with a stick. You know, so.
which is kind of an interesting combination. But, you know, I've used this analogy before, this example. If it was not hungry or threatened,
mm-hmm.
you could walk.
It would leave you alone.
You could walk through the Serengeti and walk right past a lion. It wouldn't really attack you. It doesn't have to. It is an alpha predator unless you come into become a threat or a food source.
Right.
It safely ignores you. But just because a predator hunts and kills things does not mean it's evil. It's its nature.
Nope. Yep.
Now, that being said, I'm not going to film my waterbed full of crocodiles because they're born angry and just get worse afterwards.
Oh, no. Crocodiles are one of the few things that switch to human as a food source faster than any other predator that I know of out there.
Well, as a rule,
there's been
humans are...
Except for tigers. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, humans are slower and dumber, really, from a survival standpoint. If we couldn't make tools, we'd have been exterminated years ago.
There was a show like 6 or 7 years ago called Zoo. And it was the scariest thing I ever saw. It was like all the animals had changed their algorithms and they were actually actively hunting humans.
Yes.
Like the cats were in trees talking and then the dogs will use a cute dog to pull a human away and then they all attack them. It was creepy.
That reminds me of an episode of the old show Erie, Indiana, where the kid gets the
straight. Yes, I was going to go to that next. Exactly. The kid with the giant the metal thing on his face for his teeth, he could hear the dogs talking. Leg bones, like, da-da-da-da-da. And they were going to kill him because he could hear them talking. Yes, yes.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
But
that was a creepy episode, too, yeah.
That was, and that was a good show. But still,
yeah, I missed the twins in the giant Tupperware.
Yeah, the Foreverware, that was it. Yes. but people have a tendency to think that we are the pinnacle, with the top of the food chain. When
we aren't,
from a survival standpoint, and I've used this a lot too. Your garden variety field mouse is better equipped to survive than the average human.
Right.
And not everyone can be Bear Grylls, so.
Well, just look at the number of people that die from exposure.
Yes, I mean, it's...
How dumb can you be to die from exposure? And it happens all the time.
Did you ever read a story by Jack London, To Build a Fire, where the guy...
No, but I was a big fan of My Side of the Mountain, Call of the Wild, and the other one.
You should, if you get White a chance... Thing. You get a chance to read it. You should read To Build a Fire. It's very... But then it points out how, through people's own stupidity and stubbornness, that they die.
Yeah.
And, you know, exactly. You hate to say that because you don't want to be insulting to someone who's lost their life, but it really is sometimes. It's human error. It's that simple.
I was in Boy Scouts. I never became an Eagle Scout because I was like a first class, and our scoutmaster got sent into the war somewhere. and all of our friendly troops came and robbed this blind, and I was done with being a scout. I just had it.
Yeah.
My grandmother was actually Okinichi District Chair.
Oh.
She was big into Boy Scouts. And my father was, like, original Order of the Arrow way back in the day. So my family's big into Boy Scouts, and me not becoming an Eagle Scout was kind of a big thing. But I also worked as a civilian contractor in Iraq and Antarctica. Mm-hmm. So I enjoy, and plus the driving tow truck, I enjoy being in inclement weather and doing crazy things.
Well, sometimes.
But I'm also aware that I'm human and I need to take care of myself and not be stupid.
This is true. Now, given that comparison, why do you think if humans are so, I guess, incapable, why do you think all these other entities seem to be attracted to you? Or is that a fallacy itself? Is it just that they're there, and if we run into them, we run into them? It seems as though, however,
I have an odd theory. I've actually seen a few demons, and I've actually talked to a creature identifying himself as Lucifer once or twice.
Okay.
And in fact, he likes to show up when I'm on Facebook posts claiming to be him and telling the bad Christians that, good for you, Satan approves.
Oh, oh, Lord.
So I was at the Grand Canyon a few years ago, one of my friends, and I had a demon actually press his face in and wave at me and then fly off. And I was like, that was odd. My theory is, my first pentagram was a tetragrammaton. It's one of the seven seals of Solomon. And when pagans and Christians first interacted, and I'm not talking about the witches BS and the Salem burnout, no. When Christian scholars first came across magic users, there was a collaboration. If you look at, like, say, the flirty thing, and the Trinity knot, and purple, those all came from pagans. The five-pointer star used to be in the church. So now I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'll happily talk to someone over beers and cigars, and we can hash it out. You know, this is just what I've come across in my studies. Doesn't mean it's 100%, but it's what I've found for myself, and I believe it to be true. I could be wrong. I'm not trying to start a fight with anybody. But when they first came across magic, they used it to control and categorize demons. That's what Solomon was doing, and all of the seals. And I believe that because of the use of that magic / knowledge to categorize demons is why it's a Christian thing, the Christian word for the haunting of the demons. I can't remember what it's called. I can see it in my mind, but I can't remember what it's called. Some word. It'll come to me later. I'll blurt it out. But if you'll notice, only Christians are haunted by spirits or demons. You don't see that happening to pagans. You don't see that happening to anyone else. I've never been haunted or bothered by a demon. Like I said, I had one wave at me, but that's about it. And I think it's payback for the Christians trying to control the demons. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. It's just my theory.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting theory. The possibility exists because, you know, if you look at this from a logical standpoint, if you step back, you're thinking that, okay, you're a spirit creature, an intangible. You're living in an intangible sphere. Why would you even want to interact with the physical world? What's the attraction? So, but you're saying that it could be a revenge thing. That makes perfect sense because at that point you're wanting to pay back.
Right. And I also, in my own searches and studies, believe that there's a lot of spin doctoring going on with the whole Christians and the angels are the good guys thing. I think there's a lot more not known.
What?
And I've been doing some research in, like, the books of Antioch. And like I said, I just started hanging out with a Sinisterist as I've started my left-hand path as a pagan, learning to understand and control that kind of energy. And I believe there's a lot more going on than what we're being told. Spin doctrine, you know, things have been cut out of the Bible and such, which we know for a fact with the Dead Sea Scrolls. And it was all about power with the church. But I don't want to get off on that because I'm not trying to offend people. I'm just here to talk about spirits and stuff, you know.
It's not necessarily a religious discussion per se, but speaking about this from an overreaching standpoint, there would have to be a reason. And even if that reason were actually just all of these spiritual entities are just jerks. Yeah, and that possibility exists. I interviewed a gentleman here.
Nine times out of ten, it's not a demon that's haunting your house. It's a mischievous spirit.
Well, I was getting I interviewed.
What I always find interesting is these people that have these problems will freak out and they'll go to a priest, and the priest won't fix the problem. It'll look like it fixed it, but it won't fix it. And then they don't know what to do, and they'll go to the ghost hunters. The ghost hunters really can't do anything because they're just there to make a show and make profit. They're not going to. And then finally they'll reach out to a friend who's kind of got a way with the occult, and it'll be a witch. And a witch will come in, and they'll save the crap out of your house, and they'll tell the damn spirit to go. And then it'll be fine. And the next day, they're like, oh, Jesus saved us. I'm like, no, your friend the witch just saved your ass. It wasn't Jesus.
So a lot of times, you're saying it might be the difference between someone who's researching science and then a pharmacist that actually makes the medicine that makes the sickness go away.
Right. When I was delivering pizzas in Boone, I came across a lot of silly, stupid people, which it's college. There's a lot of them. Right. And I remember I was delivering a pizza one night to this house that was next to an unsealed, like a graveyard that had activity, and there wasn't, like, it wasn't consecrated. Mm-hmm. And the girls I was delivering the pizza to had a Ouija board they had just bought. And I said, I will give you this $30 pizza for that Ouija board for free.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to be playing with that next to this graveyard. What? And I took a hit that night. You know, this is like 25 years ago. I was making $5 an hour plus tips.
Yeah.
I said,
I talked about like unlocking the doors earlier. Sometimes, rather than try to unlock a door simply because we think it's locked, sometimes we need to leave.
Right. You know, there are all kinds of ways for things to get in. Mirrors are a portal. I don't want to like freak people out because then everyone starts, you know, oh my God, the mirror. One of my pagan friends when I was living in Phoenix, he's a huge Stargate fan.
Yes.
I love Stargate too. And like the box DVD had like the Chapai, the Stargate.
Yes.
I'm a nerd, I know.
I've watched the show. It's a good show.
You ever tried threading the needle? Hang on. So, O'Neill is my favorite now. And then Commander Shepard in the Antarctica. Oh, God, yes. Anyways.
Yes.
Don't get me started. When I was in Iraq, I came across a Corporal Shepard. I'm like, you need to be a Commander Shepard so I can hang out with you. Anyways. So he said that like the Stargate had actually opened a portal next to like the mirror, and it was allowing things into his house, which, like I'm saying, people that aren't in the know of the occult, or people that don't work with the occult all the time, they can unknowingly invite things in and not know it. Like my parents, who are the most progressive Christians you'll ever come across, are still Christian. Like, they won't allow me to have any of my stuff in their house, and that's fine, it's their house. They leave food out all the time for like, small animals. And, like, they were astonished that we've had vultures show up and coyotes. And I'm like, the small animals attract the big animals. When you're leaving food out, you're attracting everything.
Yeah, I did an article about a year or so ago about bear sightings. And one of the things that the ranger I spoke to from the Kentucky Department of Conservation said, clean your grills, don't leave out pet food, because it's a food source, and the bear comes in to eat, and it'll walk right up on your back porch. So it's along those lines. I mean, you feed the little animals, the big animals show up.
Yep.
It's like the worst thing about mice really is the fact that it attracts snakes to eat the mice.
I don't like snakes.
Well.
Biologist kid.
So now, you interact and you see these things on a regular basis, but predominantly most people don't. So what do you think the reason is behind the fact that not everyone on the planet, how would you explain that?
Well, there's amongst the people that I deal with, Therians and pagans and such, there's been talk for years about the veil dropping. Well, the veil dropped in 2016.
Okay.
I'm not really sure why it dropped, but it dropped. And all these people that are starting to wake up now that are powerful empaths and stuff, we all believe it's moving towards something. Something's coming.
I see.
And the planet is not well. I had a friend who, she's like me, but she refuses to accept what she is because she watched me go nuts. When you're a shaman, you go through periods of thinking you're fucking nuts. Okay. And it's not fun. And she watched me deal with it, and she doesn't want to have to deal with it, so she won't accept her gift and what she is. But she used to read for me all the time, and she would channel angel cards, of all things. I hate angels. She channeled angel cards for me. And I would get in fights with Uriel, and he thought I was an interesting human because I told him to shut up and leave me alone.
So
But so one night she was trying to figure something out for me, because as a Taurian Gemini, when I get into a hole, where I like to say the spirits, I'm like a version for, as a shaman, I'm like their version of a dreidel. Okay. They spin me and break me and put me back together and rebuild me. We have the power, we can redo it. And they rebuild me, and then they break me again, and it's just a cycle that goes over and over again. And when I'm in the bag and I can't figure out what's going on, I'll reach out to my other friends and go, hey, can you do a reading, or can you look on across the veil and see what the hell's going on, because I can't figure it out. And one night she was doing this, and Gaia, the spirit Gaia, tried to choke her. And I got to look at Gaia, and she did not look good. And global warming, all the other BS, climate change BS, we are going to make life uninhabitable for us. The planet will be fine. We're like fleas on a dog's back.
Oh, absolutely. George Carlin said that years ago. He said, everybody's talking about saving the planet. Now, the planet's going to be okay. It's save us.
We live on a living planet. She's going to change. She's constantly changing.
But I think everyone could agree that there are things we could do differently to make the planet better. But back to the spiritual side of this, why do you think most people can't connect with, for lack of a better way of putting it, the spirit realm?
Well, a lot of people don't believe in it, you know. And I say, if you don't believe in ghosts, become a security guard for a month. It'll change your mind.
Well, I would think so, yes. Because at the end of the day, when everything's quiet and you're there by yourself, a lot of things exist that didn't exist during the day. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
And there's like I was saying with like the haunted house and the Christians, there's devious spirits out there. You can call them imps or demons, but mostly they're just spirits. And my dad and I have a disconnect on this. He says they're demons, and I go, no, they're just spirits. I don't think most things was crazy Lokean spirits aside, I don't think most things are out really to bother people, unless you're in a certain area like where some kind of trauma has happened, or you're in a house where something bad has happened and you have these repeaters that attack people. They're stuck in a trauma. They'd have no idea what's going on. You're in their space. They don't know they're dead. That kind of thing, you just need to get away from that. But say, like if you look at most of the Dogman stories, most of them don't hurt people. They just scare them. And they scare them and they chase them out of their territory. They don't actually hurt the people.
Well, then that would seem to track along with the typical animal behavior. You know, they guard their territory. But unlike people, a dog won't chase you 20 miles to kill you.
Right. Well, some of these stories, I'm like I was listening to these rangers talking about going in to, like, smelling the kill nearby and then still researching. You smell that smell, you need to leave. Like, I've come across that smell a few times too, and I knew it was bad and I needed to get the hell out of there. I didn't go search it out. I just walked my way out of the area and just didn't look back.
That would seem to be the most prudent thing to do.
I thought it was a bear, but now that I've heard more and more about the stories, I know, because bears smell more like skunks.
Well, you know, it's just like a typical report about a Bigfoot sighting is the horrible stench. And if you get
the dead carrion. Yeah. When you get something that doesn't care that it smells like dead animals, you need to get away from that.
Well, something that's 9 feet tall and several hundred pounds and covered in fur, and it doesn't have the benefit of deodorant, well, of course it's going to stink to us. And
do you prescribe to the theory that the Bigfoot is the other Neanderthal that didn't develop like us? Do you think maybe they're aliens?
There's a possibility, and I make the joke, maybe Bigfoot's just the zookeeper coming in and checking on all the animals. That's why they never find a body. It maybe just
I definitely believe that they're interdimensional beings. Before, you know, they let loose that aliens are real and blah de blah. I believe that they were, because you always hear about dogmen and Sasquatch near spirit, like Indian mounds, wherever there's like ley lines and serious magical energy, usually you can come across a Sasquatch or a dogman. And I've heard a lot of things over the last couple of years that Sasquatch seem to be like the dogmen are their hounds, like they can control them.
Well, you know,
or they're like,
there's several theories about that. I mean, entire schools of thought. I know that John Keel, in one of his books, Mothman Prophecies, mentioned that every time you see a Bigfoot sighting, there's a UFO flap. And it's possible that the UFOs drop off Bigfoot, so we get more attention to Bigfoot, and people ignore what they're doing. Possibilities. Not knowing everything, the possibilities, honestly, are endless.
I tell you what's scarier. I really see a Bigfoot than that predator-like thing that people have been seeing, that where like they can tell there's something there, and it's invisible, and it's moving around like Predator.
Yes.
That would scare me more than Sasquatch or Dogman.
Well, see, and that's, you know, you hit on a good point there. Most people are not afraid of the thing as much as they are the unknown. So
right.
If you walk out on your front porch, for instance, and you see a full-grown lion standing in your yard, you know to go back in the house. That's a lion.
But, right.
And if you walk out on your front porch and you see some distortion at the edge of the yard, what is that? And it's potentially more scary because you don't know if you're safe or you can even be safe.
Right.
That's why we whistle.
It's like the fog. Was it Stephen King, The Fog? That one was creepy, too. The whole town taken over by fog. Oh, you can't see what's out there.
The mist, yeah.
Yeah, and, the mist. And yeah.
There were monsters.
Creatures in it, yeah.
The interesting thing, you know, I'll just throw this out there just because we're discussing. When he describes that shopping center where they first encounter these things, it looked just like a shopping center in my mind. You know, I'm seeing the shopping center about 10 miles from my house. So,
oh, no, I know. I did the same thing.
Which is the mark of a good storyteller. And right. the thing I like about Stephen King, for instance, is that he does his research. His stuff is based on folklore and mythology. But at any rate, I digress. Back to the whole subject of why these things are attracted. And I guess the opposite side of that, why are we attracted to them? Why do you think
there's
going to things that could potentially just take us out in a heartbeat? Why do you think we have that?
I've heard like the conspiracy theories that, you know, during World War II and the Nazis and the president at the time and agreed that people could be taken out with a missing 411. Okay. I definitely think there's something to that. And so when I go on my walkabout, I'm going to carry my gun, but I'm also going to carry my Renfair sword.
Okay.
Because bullets miss, but 48 inches of steel doesn't.
Well, see, that's true, yes. But unfortunately, I had to make this analogy all the time, too. I like reading fantasy literature. I grew up reading it. It's one thing to romanticize about being the knight rescuing the damsel and the dragon. It's another thing to slog through a swamp with 3 foot of steel and attack a 70-foot lizard that breathes fire. Those are two entirely different things.
Actually, I saw a meme on Facebook the other day. Mm-hmm. It was like talking about, look, I'm just an introvert that likes damp things and glittery things. Why don't you take away your poke stick and let's have a conversation. Stop trying to slice my butt open.
But most people would feel safer with the gun, simply because they don't have to get within 3 feet of what they're afraid of.
With a rifle, I'm a crack shot. With my concealed carry, I've developed a lot of bad habits over the years. I don't trust my aim. Like I with 5 feet away, I don't trust my aim. I've gotten trigger pull. I have a Walther P99. It's mostly plastic.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do as good. Like I want one of those Ruger LCR 38 specials with a laser pointer on it, so I can go, look, this is where the bullet's gonna go. Leave me alone.
Well, I mean that would, and again, it comes back to tools. We make really cool things. And one thing human race is really good at is killing things.
Right.
But sometimes
we kill things just because
we're
afraid. And like I said, they weren't doing anything; they were just existing, and we came along and killed them.
Right. And it's I think part of it's tied into the fact that we think we're the pinnacle, so everything's justified. So if we're trying to go out and take care of our babies and make sure nothing eats us, why can't another creature?
I have another interesting experience for you in the mountains of Appalachian, if you want it. Have you ever heard of the tale of the woolly booger?
Yes. Yes, I have.
You have?
Yes. I've heard the reference.
What have you heard of it?
Well, I mean, it's along the lines of a Bigfoot. I've heard the reference, but please go ahead and tell me the story.
Well, the version of the woolly booger I've dealt with is a spectral entity, and it doesn't have a head.
Oh, I see. Yes. Okay.
Supposedly, it's a guardian of the Cherokee people, and if you want to come across it, go off 194 to one of the overviews of Brown Mountain. You know about the Brown Mountain Lights, I would hope.
Okay, clarify that for the listener.
Brown Mountain Light is this, it looks like a bunch of foxfires that are red and green. Foxfires are like light sources that will usually lead you into danger, like off a mountain or into a bog.
Right.
They're not good to follow.
Kind of like the medieval Will-O-the-Wisp.
Be a Will-O-Wisp, yes, yeah. Yes. And not going to go into Hinky Clumps because that's Harry Potter. Anyways, so if you go to Brown Mountain and it's a clear night, usually about 10 o'clock at night, you can start seeing red lights and green lights going back and forth across the mountain at night. And it's been going on since before the Native Americans showed up. And the Natives told a story about some giant war, and that's their family searching for them in the night. But it's been going on since before the Natives were there. It's some kind of phenomenon. It could be a gas related. It could be, like, I think that the devil's stomping grounds is nuclear, like cobalt or something. I don't think it's, you know, something phenomenal, not spiritual or anything. But no one's been able to figure out what it is. But if you go to one of the lookouts off 194, I think it's 194. I could be wrong. I may have to look up it. But it's one something. It's near Marion. If you go there, the Woolly Booger will show up. My theory that Woolly Booger shows up is because people are bringing food and beverages with them. It's a dry county. People used to bring alcohol with them. I was there one night with some friends of mine, and it came at us, and I shot at it. Didn't hit it because it's spectral.
Yes.
And then when I came back a few years later, after I'd become more aware of paganism and shamanism and all things, I was talking to one of my friends who's cat-hearted in Cherokee. Like, the day she was born, a mountain lion came and sat on her doorstep, and anytime we go wheeling, mountain lions show up. She attracts them.
Interesting.
And so I was telling her how, you know, I wanted to make amends with the Woolly Booger before I moved to Portland. And so I would go out and I would do chants and I would offer it food and stuff. And I think I made amends with it, but at the same time, it was scary. It's like,
yes,
I'm past it now, but it just, it's scary, the unknown. Like I said, I've dealt with mountain lions trying to eat my friends, and I've shot at those and it didn't bother me. I was had the adrenaline pumping of it, and that was it of it. It wasn't, like, creepy or anything. It was just, oh, there was a mountain lion, tried to eat my friend. I shot at it. It ran away. We're good. But with the Woolly Booger, it's something that it's spectral, and it's really freaking big. And there's people talk about with the Dogman, there's that fear. And I'm pretty good about negating my fear and standing to face things. And I want to be challenged by that fear because I want to see if it grips me again. And that's one of the reasons I go looking for Dogman. Being a Therian, I want to try and identify with them and see if they're actually an American werewolf, like the people I've told you about that I've come across.
Yes.
And that's what I thought. When the Beast of Bray Road came about, I thought it was just a bunch of these people that got seen.
I can understand you.
But over the years, more and more show up. And the way people describe them, I don't think they're these people. I think they're some other entity entirely. And it's possible that the aliens have been dropping them off here. It's possible. I don't think they've... I'm not really sure that they existed this entire time. But I mean, if you think about the population of the world, it's very possible that they've existed this entire time. And they're, and like someone I was listening to today, they are highly aware of us, more so than we are of them. And that's why they show caution when they interact with us. Yeah, they scare the crap out of us, but they don't do anything.
Well, if you
so there's knew, an inte- there's an intelligence there, you know.
If you knew that, you could take out one or two, but there would still always be more coming.
Right.
Would you attack the first time? It may just be intellect and logic at work there.
Right. So, but then you look at like the missing 411 and stuff for people that disappear.
Yes.
Is that the alien screaming with people, or is that Bigfoot wanted a kid, or the dog man got hungry and you were a simple meal? But the logic doesn't follow because we can't quantify it because we don't know the data on the other side. We don't know what's making these things happen. We can only guess.
Right. And until there's more data, making a logical decision will be difficult. All we can until that point is make theory. So Now all the things we've been talking about, you mentioned being part of a couple of groups. Do you share these things on social media? In other words, I'm getting as if a listener was interested in interacting with you or hearing more of what you had to say. Do you have a place where they can go?
Sure. I have a few groups, but mostly they're for pissing people off, making people laugh.
Well, yeah.
I have a pagan humor group that's actually doing really well right now. I don't know how it's doing well, but I'm thankful for it. But Kodiak Cunningham is my Facebook name.
Yes.
You can shoot me a DM. Happy to talk to someone about it. I don't really talk, like, other than like that Appalachian group where I met the person that connected us, I don't really talk about it. I tend to lurk in a lot of groups because, like I said, the Therian thing is a private matter. I don't really talk about it very often, but in order to explain the shamanism and everything's connected. And yes, I believe everything happens for a reason. So I had to elaborate on that to explain things. But I tend to not, just because, like, Twitter is plutonium and the internet can be bad as well as good. I don't want to jeopardize my livelihood or my family or anything. So I tend to be closed-lipped. But if someone was inspired by something and they want to talk to me, they can DM me at Cody at Cunningham at Facebook. That's fine.
Well, that's good to know, because some people like to follow up with the things they've heard. There may be people out there that have similar experiences to you or wanted to know more about your experience.
I still have more stuff. I just don't want to take up all your time. Not just ramble and tangent.
We can always talk again. So
yes, sir.
There's always time for another conversation. But I think for the moment,
that's good.
I think for the moment we'll wrap this up and let people digest this, and then maybe we'll give them another serving later.
Sure. Anything I can do to help out your channel, no worries.
Okay, I really appreciate it. And in the meantime, then, you have a wonderful evening, and thanks for being on the podcast.
I can finally go to sleep now. Yay.
Well, sleep well. So.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of hard the next 300 miles.
Yes, I've done long, not trucking, but I've made long trips like that frequently, and it's a beast to get anywhere. But
thanks for the chat. I enjoyed it. Hopefully I wasn't too nut-brained for you.
No, I really enjoyed it, and I think our listeners will enjoy it as well.
Okay. Yeah, you know where to get a hold of me, so take care of yourself, Charlie.
You too. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
This is Charles Romans, and on behalf of myself and our guests, thank you for joining us on this walk through the shadows of legend. If you like what you heard, please follow us and visit our website at shadowsoflegend.com and support our Patreon page to help keep the content flowing. And if you would like to be a guest and share your own brush with a stranger paranormal, don't hesitate to email us and include a contact number. The strange and surreal, the normal and the paranormal are all aspects of the world in which we live. As you reflect upon the stories we have shared, keep in mind that the people sharing these stories are actual, real people just like us. Were the stories shared compelling enough to be given credibility, or should they be relegated to the deeper part of the shadows? But when determining this, it might be a good idea to keep an open mind, because when we look around, we might discover that our own world is less brightly lit than we once thought. Until next time, I'll be waiting for you in the shadows of legend.